Vacation alert from the three-row Jeep Grand Cherokee L. Mama and Papa want to go hiking. Los abuelos want to relax at the beach. And the kids want to go to the amusement park. With seating for up to seven, you and your loved ones can enjoy all these adventures and more. Jeep, there's only one. Visit Jeep.com to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Dr. Squatch. When your personal care routine needs a refresh, Dr. Squatch is here to help. They have high-performing natural products with no harmful ingredients that'll have you looking and smelling your best. Like the Bay Rum Soap and Deodorant. It smells delightfully spicy. And right now, they have an amazing offer for new customers. Get 20% off your first purchase of any amount or a subscription order by going to drsquatch.com/Spotify or use the code Spotify at checkout.
Six goals, two hard-fought victories, home and away. A hugely important week in Manchester United's top four pursuit as a draw between Arsenal and Tottenham Hotspur in the North London derby means Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's Reds leapfrog the Gunners. United beat Crystal Palace 3-1 on Wednesday night in South London before a 3-2 comeback victory against Southampton at Old Trafford. Romelu Lukaku scores four goals in a week to silence his critics, including us. Welcome to Series 4, Episode 30 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast, where we discuss those two games, the two wins, preview the away leg of United's Champions League knockout fixture against Paris Saint-Germain and more. And as always, there's our extensive youth, loan and women's roundup unique to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Jack, a very, very good week for Manchester United, a week where after injuries to eight first-team players, fears that Manchester United midfield could collapse, that United's attack could collapse, and the defence could also collapse because of the lack of protection from a very injury-struck midfield. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's tactical decisions, helped by his team of Feeden, McKenna, Dempsey and Carrick, and more, and some very good performances from fringe players, and United have been left in a fantastic position, sitting in fourth, 1 point above Arsenal.
It's a week that ended up becoming a lot more important than we ever thought it would at the start of the season. If you looked at a fixture list of Palace and Southampton, especially coming off the back of so many important games in the last few weeks, you wouldn't have thought that this would be a particularly important week in the grand scheme of our season. But with the circumstances coming off of some very good results recently, with all the injury problems, coming back from those injury problems and kind of proving that we can change things up, we can rely on some of our more fringe players to get the job done, was a really, really important statement, if nothing else. Obviously keeps our momentum up, which is great. 6 points was perfect, especially with both Arsenal and Spurs dropping points, obviously. Now into the top four, I think, well, we're a point above Arsenal now, and only, I think, three back off Spurs, off the top of my head. So really, really important results for that, obviously, for the table. But more so, I think it was a statement to ourselves that, you know, we don't necessarily need our star players to be playing every single week for us to be able to get wins. And it was great to see the likes of Pereira and Lukaku coming through when we really needed them, because especially in Lukaku's case, been heavily criticised, I think rightly so, for much of the season. But he's really pulled it out of the bag this week. You know, obviously four goals in these two games. A lot of shouts now saying Lukaku could be right-footed after all these right-footed goals that he scored. But it was great to see him and Pereira coming through when we needed them.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing with the week. You're definitely right that it's been much more important than we ever could have known. I think even more important than, and these two games have ended up being more important than Liverpool. And as you say, no one could have predicted that. But I think, yeah, the big thing is that United's injury crisis, which caused it, to be fair, because of the mood around the club, it didn't cause as much panic as it perhaps would have done at a different time this season. But it did cause some panic and worry. And we said the United season could slide away if it wasn't managed correctly. But instead, it has ended up being incredibly beneficial. McTominay, Pereira, Lukaku and Dalot have all taken opportunities. And I think the key thing is that before the injury, Solskjaer's side was completely reliant on our starting 11. There was perhaps one substitute player who was part of that key core 12 players who had really found their confidence under Solskjaer. And I think the difference now is we've got a more balanced and confident squad, which is the whole squad is now confident. You've got players like Pereira and McTominay in backup who have also been given that ego boost, if you like, from goals or solid performances. So I think that's the key difference.
It's going to end up being hugely important because the fixture list is going to keep being very congested until the end of the season. You know, especially if we beat Wolves in the next round of the FA Cup, that adds another fixture to our schedule. There's a lot of midweek games between now and the end of the season. And it's so important that we have some of those squad players who are able to come in and fit into the team almost seamlessly. You know, we spoke last time about how some of Solskjaer's lack of rotation was probably a big factor in causing a lot of the injuries that we were suffering. And hopefully now he'll have a lot more confidence to rotate his team a little bit more. You know, we have to remember that as well as Solskjaer has done, he's still a relatively inexperienced manager, especially at this level. Obviously, he's been at Mould for a few years, had some experience at Cardiff, but this is the first time he's ever been in such a high-profile job. And he's still learning as he goes as well. And so hopefully now he'll be much more confident to rotate his teams a lot more. He will have learned his lesson about, you know, just putting the same team out week in, week out. Because I think it was pretty much, what, the first seven or eight games of his reign, it was pretty much the same starting 11.
I think the only game was probably the FA Cup game against Reading where he rested quite a lot of players. I was actually going to praise him partly for... Because I think it definitely deserves some criticism. Probably the only thing we can criticise him for is for the lack of rotation causing the injuries. I think that is true, but I understood it. And the thing I wanted to praise him for is the fact that you got someone like Andreas Pereira who came in against Burnley and firstly got the opportunity against Burnley. And when he did badly, Solskjaer then brought him on despite him having made a couple of mistakes. And in the Chelsea Cup game, the 2-0 win at Stamford Bridge, Andreas Pereira was brought on with 15 minutes left. There was no need for that. He didn't need to bring Pereira on to change the game. And I think United probably would have been more comfortable without Pereira on. Well, I think most people would have thought that before this recent two good performances from Pereira. I think that little 15 minutes for Pereira, it's a big show of faith to have a bad game against Burnley and to be brought on in the FA Cup, the fifth or the sixth round at Stamford Bridge when United are winning against Chelsea. That is key for those squad players to be given that opportunity.
Yeah, it's little things.
Yeah,
just exactly. Little things like that are massive for squad players. Just giving them a few opportunities here and there. It doesn't have to be 90 minutes every week, but they just want a chance to prove themselves and to prove that they belong in the starting 11. It was the same thing with James Garner against Palace. There was no need to bring James Garner on with 2 or 3 minutes left. You know, we easily could have kept... who did he come on for? Was it Fred he came on? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think so.
But there was no need to make that substitution. But that, to James Garner, is a massive, massive moment for him. And it was the same with players like Pereira, like you said, coming on against Chelsea. And it just keeps them in the loop. It keeps them feeling like they're sort of part of the main group of players. And it makes a massive difference because it means that when they do have to be relied upon to start, they're much more likely to come in and be able to fit into the team well.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that we have to praise Solskjaer for a lot is the fact that he's been willing to change to based around who is able to play. There are so many managers who want to just play the same way all the time, regardless of who's on the pitch. And while some managers are kind of able to do that, Solskjaer's been able to recognise that he can't necessarily play the same way and with the same system that he plays when we have all of our players fit. And so when he has the likes of McTominay, Pogba and Pereira, who are going to be his midfield, he's realised that he has to switch up the formation, switch up the way that we try and play, especially without Martial and Lingard playing up front as well. And I think he's done very, very well to try and adapt to the circumstances that are going on, both within the games, like we saw against Liverpool, and also between games. There's clearly been a lot of work going on trying to implement this new sort of diamond system that he's now favouring. I think they've done really, really good tactical work to try and deal with these injuries.
Solskjaer's been really adaptable and pragmatic, and he's had United's ideals at heart, but at the same time he has shown himself to be adaptable and pragmatic, which is something I think that most people perhaps wouldn't have expected and haven't given him credit for, because they've been so focused on his smiley persona and kind of bubbly character.
It's kind of like pragmatism with limits, you know, rather than sort of the Jose pragmatism where it's anything can be discarded in favour of a 1-0 win potentially. It's like, I'll be pragmatic but within these sort of attacking football boundaries that he set out.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's massively helped by the fact that United are winning games. I think United have deserved their results in every game that Solskjaer's been in charge for. But obviously, our take on his pragmatism, and there will be limits at some point when we start to lose games, and probably we'll lose two on the bounce at some point if Solskjaer becomes the permanent manager, and obviously things will feel slightly different then. But and I've been really impressed because, as you say, switching the formations up, and I think it's probably been forced a little bit because you see new managers come in and they have the pre-season to work with their team, and they get their ideals in, they get the Maurizio Sarri gets his philosophy in, Pep Guardiola does the same, and obviously you do that as a manager, that's exactly what you should do. Because he's come halfway through the season, he's effectively been forced to be pragmatic and to not instill this one formation of 4-3-3 or the 4-2-3-1 diamond, whatever. He's had to change, and I think that massively helps, because we go to Stamford Bridge, we know exactly how Chelsea are going to play, but we surprise them with Mata at the tip of a diamond. And I think that he's kind of been forced to do that, but it's been very beneficial to United.
Yeah, it's a tough situation when you come in halfway through the season, because you're kind of limited in what you can do, especially when you do have a style of play that you really want your team to be able to play. It's tough to come in and you know, implement that straight away. I remember, I think I've said this before on here, but I remember when Pochettino first went to Spurs, and he found it really, really tough in that first season because his players just weren't fit enough to play that sort of really intense pressing game that he wanted. And that is an example of how difficult it can be for a manager, especially a manager who has sort of a set philosophy and a set way that they want to play. It's really, really difficult when you come in midway through a season to get your team working in exactly the way that you want to. And Solskjaer's done really, really well, I think, to try and implement the style of football that he wants to play, because he still has done that to a large degree. But he's done really, really well to recognise kind of the limits of that as well, and recognise where he might not be able to do everything exactly the way that he wants, where he might have to tinker with things a little bit depending on who's available or depending on who we're playing. You know, I think he's done a great job of kind of managing that. I mean, I just can't praise the coaching staff enough, not just Solskjaer, but obviously Carrick, Kieran McKenna as well. Everyone in the coaching staff has done such a good job, I think, of managing the situation that we've been in, because we've made the changes that we needed to make to change us from, obviously, this very boring, sort of sluggish team that we were under Mourinho. And we are a very different team now, but they also haven't tried to go too far to a point where the players don't have any idea what they're doing. And like we said, they are still being very pragmatic where they need to be and being adaptable to whatever the sort of circumstances are that we're playing in.
I think, do you remember when Roberto Martinez took over from David Moyes at Everton, and he had a fantastic first season, and then things kind of fell off? I think I'm not predicting that's going to happen. I don't think that will happen. But I think on a very small scale, I think Solskjaer's been really important. And I heard him speak about it the other day, about working on the defensive shape and the back four, knowing where they're playing in the back four. So perhaps this is unfair for me to say, but I think United have probably benefited from Mourinho's defensive structure that he had built up. And I'm not saying it was a good thing, because it left us as an incredibly boring side. But I think because Solskjaer has that base foundation with which to work with, and has kind of moulded it to be a lot better and a lot smoother and much better, I mean, just overall, I think that's probably been beneficial. I don't think it will fall off, because I think he has the coaching quality there to not do what Roberto Martinez did. But just a small point. But I wanted to pick out a few of the biggest kind of tactical changes and adaptability that we've seen over the last week or so. Starting with Palace, starting with Diogo Dalo and Ashley Young. Dalo on the right wing, Young at the more traditional right back position, kind of switching roles weirdly. The veteran and the youngster, and protected against Wilfred Zaha fantastically. And then he made a little tweak later in the game. But first of all, it's just that kind of, he could have played Tahith Chong, and it would have been fantastic to see Chong, but actually playing Dalo and Young together on that right side was a brilliant tactical decision that helped to nullify Zaha to a certain extent.
Yeah, 100%. I was very worried when I initially saw the MUTV team sheet that had Ashley Young playing as the right winger instead of Dalo. But I think in the end it was a really good decision by Solskjaer, because like you said, it's really easy to go to places like Selhurst Park. And with no disrespect to Palace, they're not the kind of team that you face often and you think about what the threat that they might pose. You kind of think about the threat that you're going to pose to Palace and imposing yourself on them. But I think they did a really good job actually of just admitting that Zaha is a very good player, and it's someone that we needed to pay extra attention to. And the combination of Dalo and Young did really, really well down that right-hand side. thought Darlow had a great game, which he then carried on into Southampton as well. When he came on, I think he created the most chances of anyone in the game, even though he came on in like the 55th minute or something. So he's played really well. And I think Solskjaer deserves a lot of credit for setting us up against Palace in that way. I mean, I've been very critical of Ashley Young, and I will continue to be very critical of Ashley Young if he keeps playing in the same way. But I think having him and Darlow down that right-hand side really, really helped against Palace.
To be fair to Young, and I'm also critical of him, despite him having been my favourite player when he first joined United, weirdly. In fact, he was one of my favourite players before he signed for United, which is a criminal thing to think, given he played for Aston Villa, but it was a weird
one. When I was actually watching the United-Liverpool game in a pub, I was sitting next to a guy with an Ashley Young, sort of like 2010 United kit on, and it was just reminding me of the 8-2. How times have changed.
But to be fair to Young, and we have been critical of him, I think deservedly so, because he shouldn't be United's long-term right-back. But as a right-back, I think he copes with players a lot better than some right-backs do. Players like Zaha and Eden Hazard, who can manoeuvre the ball from inside to outside, who can cut in and cut out on a whim. And Young's kind of that kind of slippery bastard who can suddenly turn around and then has the brilliant pace and acceleration to be able to deal with that. So I was slightly confused when he played Dalot at right wing and Young at right back, but actually I think it was a much better decision, because Young is better at coping with that from what we've seen in the Premier League so far. But also then Palace got their goal, which was actually a mistake from Ashley Young, but Solskjaer then changed it and showed that pragmatism, brought Eric Bailly on, shifted Young forward, and 6 minutes later Ashley Young scored the goal that wrapped the game up for United, and they controlled it from there. So it was I think what we saw with the Palace game, 8 first team injuries coming into it. Rashford managed to make the bench, so only 8. I say only 8 because people said there were 10 going into it. But yeah, 8 first team injuries. Rashford comes off the bench, and Rashford didn't really do much, but his running kind of helped to cause problems on the Palace defence as well. And we saw from Solskjaer both good pre-game decision making in terms of Dalot and Young, and the kind of surprise of having Fred in there. And then we also saw the in-game ability to change the game.
Yeah, both sides of it, in-game and pre-game switches, were really, really effective from Solskjaer. You're definitely right about Young being a slippery bastard. It's probably the best way I can possibly describe him. He does kind of just get under the... Yeah, just kind of gets under the skin of whoever's around him. And he did deal with Zaha pretty well, apart from the goal. But yeah, you're right about Solskjaer's in-game changes. I think it's probably... To be fair, it's probably the part of his management I think that's been weakest so far. He has made some good substitutions, but I think in general he's maybe been a little bit slow to react. But against Palace, I thought his substitutions were very, very good, especially bringing on Bailly and just adding that extra defensive presence in there. Obviously, yeah. Young, when he got switched forward, obviously ended up getting the goal. But I think it did a lot to try to kind of help us solidify at the back. I still would love to see a Lindelof and Bailly partnership be tested long-term. Because as well as I think Smalling has done recently, some of those moments in the Southampton game were kind of more evidence of why I think Bailly is probably more of the answer at centre-back, although we probably need a whole new starting centre-back in the summer. But either way, I think Solskjaer deserves a lot of credit. I think the Palace game was probably his best game in terms of changing things both pre-game and in-game. And how effective they were. You know, we've had some great tactical displays against Spurs and against Chelsea, even against Arsenal as well. But I think for the circumstances that we had with all of the injuries and kind of the surprises that we had with the lineup with Darlow and Young both starting, and even the Bailly sub, when Bailly kind of came on, I was kind of a bit wary of Bailly playing right back, position where he hasn't really played very much for United at all. But I think Solskjaer, that was probably his best game in terms of making some quite drastic changes and all of them coming off really, really well.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Lindelof and Bailly situation. I think it's worth also noting that there is no longer any controversy or discussion pretty much over who starts in United's defence every game. It is Lindelof and someone else, and no one really cares who. I mean, people have their opinions. For example, you want Bailly, I think I probably want Bailly, some people want Smalling, some people want Jones, weirdly. But there isn't any controversy over the matter. It is Victor Lindelof and someone else, and no one questions that.
I think part of that is because Lindelof is clearly our first choice centre back. That and the others, all right. You know, I think Bailly is a better option than Smalling. Some people would say the opposite, but realistically,
they're similar,
there isn't that much between the others. And so, as long as it's Lindelof and someone else, we're not really losing out on too much.
I think we should also give credit for the Southampton game. A very poor first half. I think United started well in the first 5 minutes, and then that head injury to Scott McTominay slowed the game down, and Southampton came out. And if they hadn't scored that brilliant goal from Jan Valerie from like 25 yards out, just a beautiful strike, I think they would have scored within the next 10 minutes. So I don't think it made much difference. And then once they scored, United slowly started to kind of wrestle the game back into their control, and the response was fantastic. I think there were so many players who deserve credit. Andreas Pereira's goal was just superb. Romelu Lukaku, I think we should probably talk about first, because we've given him a lot of stick, and he has been fantastic this week and kind of has dragged Manchester United to two wins with a couple of very passionate celebrations, and rightly so. He's been a man under pressure. He hasn't scored for 6 weeks, I think, 4 goals in 2 games, and it's fantastic to see him back in form with two fantastic finishes against Palace and Southampton, 2 goals in each game. I think particularly from us, we need to give him credit.
Yeah, and 3 of those 4 finishes were all incredibly similar, with his right foot kind of curling them into the far corner. Just before I get to Lukaku, actually, I just want to quickly say a little bit about kind of how I think Southampton were so good in the first half, because they pressed us so, so quickly. Whenever we had the ball at the back, they were completely on us. And I think that is probably the area, the only time where I really saw the difference between the midfield we have playing at the moment and the midfield we would normally have playing. Because I think, although Matic and Herrera aren't the best midfielders on the ball in the league by any means, they are still a lot more comfortable under pressure than especially McTominay and to a lesser extent Pereira. And Hasenhüttl put his team out to press us very, very quickly high up the pitch. And that was a big reason why we just couldn't get anything going against Southampton, because we couldn't even get out of our own half. We just didn't have the players that were capable of breaking that press. But anyway, on to Lukaku, who's been just brilliant this week. I've given him a lot of stick. And I stand by everything that I've said in the past, because he hasn't been good enough this season. And I don't think a lot of his performances have been acceptable. But to be fair to him, he's done so, so well this week. His general play improved a lot. You know, even last season when he was scoring goals, a lot of the criticisms that we had of him was that his general play wasn't particularly good. And even though he was scoring goals, he was actually kind of making us less fluid in our play. But he's done really well in the last 2 games, even 3 games, where I think his build-up play has been much better. He's been able to control the ball a lot better and bring other people into play. And I think it really, really helps him playing alongside someone else, you know, especially against Southampton. We went with 2 up front for the majority of the game. I think that really helps Lukaku, because it just means he can be a bit more varied in his runs. And I've realised that, and we kind of spoke about this a little bit earlier in the season, how even though Lukaku kind of physically has the dimensions of being a classic sort of target man striker, it's never really been his game, and he seems to thrive more when he's off running into the channels. And when he has a strike partner with him, he has a little bit more freedom to go and do that, well, also, especially because we don't have as many natural wide players at the moment.
Yeah, and also because he can run into those wide positions, if he's got a partner with him, he then has someone to aim for in the box, who is Marcus Rashford. Whereas when he's playing up front and you've got, say, Alexis Lingard, those players aren't going to be in the box. They're going to be waiting on the edge of the box to do what Lukaku himself is doing, which is delivering that ball in. So I think having Rashford there is fantastic for him. But yeah, the finishes were brilliant.
And then there's the added presence of Pogba as well, getting into the box, because now he has a lot more license to get forward than he did under Mourinho.
Well, and Andreas Pereira stepping forward, something that Solskjaer said after the game. He said maybe we found a better position for Pereira. He's more of an 8 or a 10. He's got high energy, good passing, etc. I think it's definitely true. We've said it on this podcast a number of times. Pereira's not a defensive midfielder. He's not a holding midfielder. He's not a deep line playmaker. That's just not where he should be playing. He was fantastic. Who else? We haven't got that long, but we need to mention a few other players who have been fantastic over the last week. Luke Shaw. The run for the goal he set up against Palace for Lukaku was just fantastic. It reminded me of the run he made when he broke his leg against PSV 4 years ago. But just incisive, brilliant footwork. And released it at the perfect time, and he's been brilliant defensively. And I remember talking on the podcast last week saying Shaw's been great defensively, but we haven't seen as much from him in attack, and we have now.
Yeah, and there's been plenty of examples in the last couple of weeks where he's made a big difference going forward. Even if you look at Pereira's goal as well, his decoy run creates so much space for Pereira, and it gives him the room to be able to get the ball out of his feet and put that shot in on goal. I think every single person both at Old Trafford and around the world watching the game, was probably screaming at Pereira to play in Shaw down the left. But in the end, he made the right decision and culled in that world.
Yeah, and Dalot was the man who changed the game, I think. Although that change to bring Sanchez off was forced from Solskjaer, they did respond well. They made the right change, I think, is a key thing. And I think, as you say, I think Solskjaer's sometimes too slow to react so far. And I don't think he would have brought Sanchez off if he hadn't been injured, which is... possibly a problem. But when Sanchez did come off injured, Dalot comes on. He was fantastic. Those runs coming inside, brilliant. Those runs on the outside, brilliant. Anything Dalot does in that right wing position has been superb against Palace and Southampton. And I think, yeah, deserves a lot of praise, Dalot, for his impact as a 19-year-old. And yeah, doing brilliantly.
I still forget quite often that he's 19 years old because, well, firstly, he doesn't look 19 years old. But the way he plays is just, you know, maybe not of a veteran, but definitely not of a teenager. He seems so much more composed than, even if you compare him to the likes of, you know, Tahith Chong, Angel Gomez, James Garner, those kind of players who are all great talents, don't get me wrong, but Dalot just looks so much more composed and like he plays like more of an experienced player than a lot of those guys. A lot of that probably comes from the fact that he's played a lot more senior football, obviously back in Portugal before he came to United. And so you kind of gain that experience the more that you play. But I think he looks like a great talent. I really think we need to see him for an extended run at right back, because I think right back is an interesting position for us this summer. You know, right now, I would say we probably don't have a good enough right back at the moment between Young or Dalot. Young is okay, but he's pretty average at best, you would probably say, despite being a slippery bastard sometimes. And Dalot, as much as I rate Dalot and I think he could be a very, very good player for us, at the moment you'd probably worry a little bit that he's maybe a little bit too inexperienced and maybe not quite good enough defensively to play right back for us as our starter. So I think we need to see Dalot from now until the end of the season get an extended run of games at right back and really figure out whether we can afford to not bring in someone else over the summer. I guess the ideal scenario would probably be bring in an experienced right back who could play for a couple of seasons and with Dalot kind of learning from them in training and then Dalot to take over permanently. But regardless of sort of when that happens, it looks like we have a great talent on our hands.
I'd just throw Dalot in there straight away. New manager, no one's expecting us to win the title next season, I don't think. Just throw him in there by the time we're wanting to be challenging for the title, which is probably not next season, but the season after. He'll be 20 going on 21. And that's fine. He looks like a talent who can handle that, and he's clearly got great maturity. And Iko Yogala asked on Twitter,
"It's time for Dalot to get an extended run in the team, but where do we play him so that in the long run the team benefits and improves?" Well,
you've got your answer there. Jack says right back. I say right back, even though he's doing really well on the wing. And there's nothing wrong with playing on the wing.
I don't think you can necessarily say that he will definitely end up at right back. There is still a chance that he might end up as a right winger, but I think we at least need to see him play at right back for a long amount of time to decide whether he can play there or not. Because so far we just see him sort of one game every month or so playing at right back, and it's kind of hard to tell whether he can actually do it from that. So even if he does end up being a right winger long term, which I could potentially see happening, we need to at least be able to say definitely whether he is a right back or not.
Yeah, final thing we'll say before we move on to the youth loan and women's roundup is that United didn't change their style when they conceded that second goal. That fantastic James Ward-Prowse free kick against Southampton United. Did not resort to hoofball or Fellaini ball because Fellaini was scoring a goal in China. And I think that's notable. They didn't change the style throughout the game. They carried on going. They changed their shape when Dalot came on, which was a very, very good change and a very impactful. But with no Fellaini as plan B, we continue to kind of work hard at what we're good at rather than resorting to long balls. I think that's a massive positive. And I think the biggest positive is the fact that it came off and we got our winning goal. So it vindicated that decision.
Oh, 100%. I think that was one of the most pleasing aspects of the entire game. We never resorted to long balls. And to be fair, we even did have some players on the pitch that we could have used to play a kind of a long ball sort of game as well. You know, we could have thrown Smalling up front like we've seen before. We had Lukaku on the pitch, who's very good in the air. Pogba, you know, we had players who were capable of sort of playing that style. And it's so pleasing that we never did. We kind of stuck true to how we've been playing and what's been successful.
Right, United's youth sides have been impacted by the recent injuries, with Chong, Gomez and Garner and Greenwood, in fact, stepping up into the first team squad, or at least travelling with them. That's given chances to some of the younger players in the under-18s and under-23s and even the under-16s to get more game time at higher levels. Under-16, Mipo Odubeko, a striker, has been in action for the under-18s, as I told you last week, and the under-18s drew 2-2 with West Brom on Saturday morning at the Aeon training complex. Dion McGee scored a superb goal and Ted Mengi saw an effort deflected in, but United conceded two silly goals to only draw against West Brom at Carrington. Shola Shortire, 15-year-old, made his debut at this level on that day as well, coming off the bench, having already become United's youngest ever under-18s player in the UEFA Youth League earlier this season at the age of 14. Welsh player Easton Hughes also made his debut. They both did well from the bench, and goalkeeper Jacob Carney has been getting more chances of late and is impressing. The under-23s, meanwhile, lost 2-1 to Norwich despite going ahead through a Josh Bowie strike. The former Brentford forward shimmied to his right, then his left on the right side of the area before a fantastic swerving and dipping strike into that far left corner. Poor defending, same as the under-18s, saw another loss for United, and it's a familiar theme at both levels. In low news, Ethan Hamilton has been winning awards for his goals with relegation threatened Rochdale in League One. Kieran O'Hara remains Macclesfield's number one, and they lost 3-0 to Bury at the weekend. James Wilson came off the bench for Aberdeen in a 1-1 cup draw against Rangers up in Scotland. Regan Poole, the defender, played the full game in Newport County's 2-0 win against Carlisle United, and Zach Durnley started up front for Oldham Athletic under the management of Paul Scholes in a 1-1 draw with Stevenage. He's been used as a striker at the moment, used to play on the wing. Manchester United's women's team don't play until next Sunday. They beat Sheffield United, I think it was 4-0 last week, but we told you about that last week in the Championship, and they play in the Championship again next Sunday against Leicester. But the under-16s girls side lost in the semi-final of the FA Youth Cup against Chelsea on penalties, beaten 5-4, but fantastic effort for them to get that far. Now, Jack, a massive game on Wednesday. No one's really given us a chance, and I think probably rightly so, but, well, at least fairly so. I don't think anyone's complaining about the fact that people are half writing us off so far, but United do have a chance. 2-0 down, going to Paris, lots of injuries, Pogba suspended, we haven't got any of our first choice midfielders. We need to win 2-0 to force extra time, or win by two goals to win, for example, a 3-1 win. Pogba suspended, Matic and Herrera injured, Martial unlikely to be available, Solskjaer said this morning, Lingard out, Alexis out, Mata out. I mean, things in a way aren't looking good at all, but Lukaku back on form is positive. Dallo is an option. Fred Pereira and McTominay have been playing better, but still a massive worry against players like Verratti and PSG's brilliant attack.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what we were saying at the start of the episode. You know, it's all these squad players playing so well. It's a massive positive for us because it means we can at least go into the PSG game thinking whether, you know, it's very, very unlikely that we will get something out of the tie, but at least we can go there and compete with PSG. If you'd have said a couple of weeks ago that we'd be facing PSG with, you know, a potential midfield of Pogba, McTominay, Pereira and Dalot, you'd be thinking we'd be about 4-0 down inside 20 minutes. I mean, it's a massive change. And listen, anything can happen in the Champions League. I don't expect us to win the tie, and I don't really think anyone is. All I'm hoping for is that we at least put a decent account of ourselves out on the night. Hopefully, if we can at least avoid defeat on the night, I would say that would be a positive outcome from the game. Yeah, and listen, if we get the first goal, who knows what can happen? You know, PSG have a reputation of, I don't want to call them bottlers because it feels like a lazy kind of stereotype, but they do have a history of blowing some very comfortable leads and of maybe choking in Europe. So you never know what might happen. If we can get an early goal, you know, go into half time with the lead, then anything can happen in the second half. The big thing for us though, really, is making sure we don't concede, because if we concede one goal, then it's not curtains, but then it becomes really, really tough.
Yeah, I think I'd have to disagree with you slightly. I think I'm going into the game hoping that we win and we go through, because it might be the hope that kills you, but I mean, that's the point of football, to be honest. And obviously, if we hadn't had such good form and we weren't so entertained by our side and in love with our manager, then I wouldn't be hoping that we're going to go through. I'd be thinking, no, we're done. But I mean... I don't want to lie and say I'm hoping we just kind of win by one goal on the night and don't kind of disgrace ourselves, because when it comes to the day, when it comes to the morning of the game, I'm going to wake up and think, yeah, let's go and beat PSG and master one of the greatest comebacks in the Champions League at this stage of the competition that United have ever managed. We've done it before. Obviously, it's more difficult going away in the second leg. Obviously, we've got a lot of injuries, and I don't think we will do it, but I am going to go into it hoping that we do it. Realistically, you want to say there's no chance of United doing it, but I don't want to tell myself that. And in terms of how United play, it's really difficult to see what they can do. Because PSG will have a fully fit Verratti, who is a fantastic player. Marquinhos did very well against United in the first leg. I think one interesting thing will be the fact that without Pogba, and no Pogba is a massive worry because we've only had one game under Solskjaer without him playing, and that was, as I said earlier, the FA Cup third round game against Reading, which we didn't need him for. So no Pogba, but I think interestingly, because no Pogba, it'll be intriguing to see how PSG play, because we saw Marquinhos defend Pogba out of the game, basically, at Old Trafford. There won't be that one player in United's team that PSG try to mark now. I think it's a more balanced, a more average side United will put out, but a more balanced team.
I mean, you could maybe say Rashford would be the one player that you'd focus on the most, but I mean, Rashford, as good as he has been, I don't think commands attention like Pogba does. And just through him not being a midfielder, even though he can come up with really special moments, you know, it's very tough for a striker to dictate a game the way that a midfielder can. So yeah, I think you're right. It might end up creating a few more opportunities for us. At least make PSG kind of defend in a more orthodox way, which hopefully will create a little bit more space for us in midfield. Because that was one of the things that we really struggled with in the first leg, was PSG just congested midfield so well. And obviously marked Pogba pretty much out of the game. And it just stopped us being able to build up any rhythm. It's going to be tough either way, but we just got to go out there and play positively. It's the only way we know how under Solskjaer.
Prediction,
I'll say a 2-1 United win on the night, but we go out.
United to win 4-0. Lukaku to get a hat-trick. Rashford to score one. Pogba to run on the pitch from the stand and rip his shirt off. And right, allez les rouges. No, I don't know. I'm not going to make a prediction because I'm only going to disappoint myself when we inevitably go out. But I mean, we've said this so many times. We've said it going into so many games. We've said it after the Liverpool game, that the fact that we were disappointed by drawing to the league leaders, who are now fantastically not top of the league anymore, which is beautiful to see, made my day much better.
Just thinking ahead, I think going into that Manchester derby is going to be the weirdest feeling ever.
Yeah, very much. But the point I was trying to make before I got distracted by my joy at the fact that Liverpool are now second is...
Did the wind distract you, Harry?
The wind, the grass, United's injuries, yeah. But yeah, the fact that I'm going into this game with any kind of hope at all is both ridiculous, it's stupid, I shouldn't be doing it, but that's what we've managed to do. That's what Solskjaer and his team have managed to do.
Being a football fan is an irrational game.
Yeah, definitely. Right, that's all we have time for on another packed episode of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast for you all. For more from us throughout the week, you can find Jack on Twitter.
At UTD Tate, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me at Harry Robinson 64. The podcast is at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Remember to share it with your mates on Twitter and leave us a review on iTunes. Have a great week. Enjoy the PSG game. We'll be back soon. Goodbye.
Network. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.